Hello, I am Cécile Gauert, editor of Bode International US edition. For today's Big Bode interview, I had the pleasure to speak with Pamela and Jamie Ellison, owners of the yacht Calliope and founders of the Blue Trident Charitable Foundation. Last summer, around Cape Cod, they took on a group of scientists from the Beneath the Waves Conservation NGO for one of the very first studies conducted on a really large and very little known fish called the Mola Mola, or ocean sunfish, in its environment. They joined us from their alpaca farm in Vermont on Thanksgiving Eve to talk about their explore yacht, their experience with Calliope's first scientific mission, and what they plan to do next. The experience, they say, was interesting, fun, valuable, and relatively easy. And yes, there will be a next time.
Hi, good morning, Jamie and Pam. How are you?
Good morning, very well.
How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy to chat.
Great. So where are you today? It doesn't look like you're anywhere near the sea.
We're not on our motor yacht today. We're actually up at our Vermont farm, which is an alpaca farm. So a little bit different.
Wow.
When you get on the ocean or in an exotic place, it's actually a 6 inches of snow on the ground and cold, but very festive for a Thanksgiving weekend.
That's right. For us, for our listener here in the US, we are waiting for Thanksgiving tomorrow. So very exciting. So it makes it even more special that you would take the time today to talk with us. So let me see. Can we bring you out of Vermont and back onto Calliope? Sorry, I'm probably mispronouncing that. Calliope, Calliope,
Calliope. Calliope, I say Calliope, you say tomato, I say tomato.
Tomato, yes. All right, you say it then.
It depends where you are in the world.
Calliope is the phonetic proper pronunciation because the boat is actually named after the muse for Homer, who wrote the Odyssey, a famous sea voyage, and Pam and my son chose the name. So if we were going back to that origin, then it would be Calliope.
Very nice. Yes, I do remember that muse from my high school days. I haven't picked up the Odyssey for a while, though. So back on your boat, I was very interested when I went to an international seakeepers event during the Fort Lauderdale International Boat Show, that they were recognizing some of the vessels that have helped collect some scientific information by taking on scientists and doing a mission there. And lo and behold, your boat was one of the boats recognized this year. So that's why I kind of wanted to talk to you about and see if you could tell us a little bit more about what you did and why you did it.
Sure. And we'll try to tag team on our answers here a little bit,
Cecile. Okay, that's fine.
and make sure we're both talking about the opportunity. But the opportunity to do charitable activities with our yacht was something we're interested in. We have a foundation, Blue Trident Foundation, which is focused on ocean conservatory activities, as well as food needs and a number of other community needs, but it's had a heavy emphasis from the founding, therefore the name Blue Trident, on the blue, the ocean.
Okay.
And so as we looked around and thought about it, we happened to be at LMC, the well-known yard in Fort Lauderdale that a lot of yacht owners use for their different yard periods and various repair times, and noticed about 2 years ago that there was going to be a cocktail party about international seakeepers.
This was pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID. Well, actually, it was the start of COVID. So it was a controlled cocktail party. And they were announcing gaining a new vessel for their yacht Discovery, or their Discovery Yacht Program, which allowed yacht owners, I think it dates back to, for international seakeepers, Paul Allen, who used to own one of the largest yachts in the world, that would often lend his yacht for various scientific discovery expeditions. And mirroring that on a larger scale, they built International Seakeepers and then built this Discovery Yacht Program, where a yacht owner can decide where he's going to be in what part of the ocean, Asia, Europe, or surrounding the North American and South American continents. And after determining those periods and those locations, could get together with International Seakeeper and say, we'll make our vessel available to a scientific group and we'll host them along with our tender or a tender they rent to go out and do experiments. That facilitates relatively low budgets in the scientific community for them to get out in the field and do these experiments. You can run from focusing on the migratory path of whales from Cape Cod down to Turks and Caicos, which we just heard about from Beneath the Waves, the scientific group that we hosted this past summer, to shark tagging, which I think a lot of the islanders are.
That's probably the most popular activity, I would imagine.
It is, in all honesty, one of the most popular ones, along with whales and a couple other very well-known sea creatures. But you can end up hosting and providing that support vehicle, the yacht, to those scientists so they can go off and do those experiments, have a home base, and get a lot of work done over a concentrated period, 5 days for five or six scientists, along with the vessel. We happen to have a explorer vessel, so I thought it was a great activity for us to be charitable with. And so we offered up some dates and ended up doing one this last summer. I'd also mention that Seakeepers as a society encourages people to donate, sometimes for the tax benefit, but to donate their yachts if they determine they don't want to sell them to Seakeepers, and they make those regular scientific vessels. So they have both the kind of their own programs and then this matching capability where they're matching scientific teams with yacht owners willing to host them in a location where they can get that science work done.
And it's not only yachts, it's also just like down in the Fort Lauderdale area, they do several, I think multiple day trips with people's tenders. You can have a much lower investment with it. And they utilize those.
Large tenders are also in high demand to host students at the various Southern Florida or California, college students, et cetera. So there's a lot of opportunities for people to be doing something that would help, protect and conserve the resources through scientific study in this kind of International Seakeeper. And by the way, probably other organizations.
That's right. Actually, I was just about to jump in and mention Boat International is actually working on something called Yachts for Science with Necton. And we try to do exactly that as well, matching yacht owners and their vessels with scientists or programs that will benefit from the donation of a yacht for a time or whatever else is going on at the time. But I think it's a fantastic thing to do. Just let me go a little bit in the history with the boat. You haven't owned KLOP for so long. So this is, you jumped in this fairly soon after you got the boat, didn't you?
Well, yeah. Let me preface that. Jamie's always wanted to be a marine biologist since he was a kid. Just putting that into reality a little bit. But I think that's been an interest, Jamie's, for his lifelong interest.
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination. But yeah, voyage in yachting, as it goes, started with a 76-foot Lazara, just a four-stateroom boat that we used up and down the East Coast. A great vessel, but it had us catch the bug and want us to do more.
Uh-huh.
Looked at owning a larger yacht for a while and then decided that we wanted an explorer yacht, a particular type of yacht, as you know, Cecile, though, that is built for long-range travel. Ours travels 4,000 to 5,000 miles, so it can cross oceans, and you can be on it for a considerable period of time. It particularly fits this type of endeavor well because it is self-sufficient. It carries a very large tender and a number of sea toys or water toys with it. And so we ended up building a yacht over in Europe in 2017 and 18 and then took delivery. And the yacht was moved over to the U.S. in, I think, late 2019, 2020. So that's kind of our history. And, we have been blessed both personally and family-wise with good health and fortunate. So we had the wherewithal to do it. But being able to give back to the community and, as you mentioned, it started with the ocean. which is at times challenged with the growth of a global population and changes in the environment. That's a big deal for us because we want to leave it in as good a condition or better than we found it for our children. So just seemed like a natural fit.
That's great. So can we get a little bit into the specifics of what you did with Beneath the Waves? First of all, did you have a choice of what you could pick, or how did the connection happen there?
So we got together with a guy, and I met at the initial cocktail party along with the
Tony Gilbert,
CEO, or the founder of Sea Keepers, yeah, and the board, and with a gentleman named Tony Gilbert, who arranges, as Pam said, those kind of collaborations. And they were very kind to host a number of different ideas. As you mentioned, Cecile, and Boat International may be doing, you're trying to pair the scientific team and their desired location with a yacht that wants to participate in the Discover Yacht Program and its intended location. And when you have a bingo, you can kind of look at that. But they will adjust, and the teams are various. We ended up with a group called Beneath the Waves out of Washington, D.C., an NGO. So we did have a choice, and we were delighted to host the NGO Beneath the Waves.
But the process was relatively simple. Tony speaks with lots of different organizations, as you might expect, and he paired us with them. We did a group Zoom. Everybody was everywhere. Their scientists were all over the world. We're into the Zoom, sort of just a get to know you kind of thing. What are you guys going to do? And what are you interested in? And I think a big part of it for us too was we didn't want to micromanage what they were going to study and what they're going to do. And as we talked about before, sharks are super interesting and the whales are very charismatic. But there's a lot, although there's very little money, I guess, comparatively for philanthropic giving for ocean conservation issues. We studied the Mola Mola, which looks like a big old milk dud, not exactly a very charismatic creature, but we didn't want to micromanage it. We wanted to let them, go with what they wanted to do. And they seem like lovely people on the Zoom. So it ended up all working out. So.
Okay. So, but your boat you use for your family and your friends, so you don't charter. So how did it feel to get a bunch of people you have never met onto the boat? And I guess you actually spent a few days as well with them, right?
We spent the weekend. Yeah, they arrived on a Tuesday and left the following Monday. We joined them area? Yep. They started in Chatham trying to fish. They were trying to catch the Mola Mola. And unfortunately, they had really bad weather and they weren't catching a lot. And you can imagine the pressure from their point of view, too, that they're borrowing essentially this yacht for, a week, and they're not catching the fish that they wanted. That's like the supreme fisherman pressure. But we joined them Friday in Provincetown. And then, I don't know, as luck would have it, they ended up exceeding their quota, which was they wanted to catch 10. And
there you go. You were their lucky charm.
I don't know. But yeah, that's.
Yeah, so the Mola Mola it's the largest bony fish in the ocean. In fact, there was one recently caught that totaled over 800 pounds. So it's a
800 pounds. Yeah. That's a lot of fish.
Wow. Just this big gray blob with thousands of parasites on it. It's the craziest looking thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's relatively difficult because they're trying to, in an ocean, spot this fish. So Beneath the Waves is a interesting organization. The scientists they paired in our week were coming from all around the globe. Some people came in from Europe. Some came from Florida and various universities and were professors. Yeah. Almost all of them were doctors in a field, a marine biology field. And they came together and we basically allowed the boat to become a moving station for them, a research point, and they used our tender and their own donated tenders from tender drivers to go out and spot the fish. And so we had a great time. We tried to stay out of their way a little bit.
We did.
We went out on a couple of the trips. They are spending literally. They would get up in the morning, 8 o'clock. We'd serve them breakfast, and they would go out and be gone till 5 o'clock at night. And just driving around trying to spot a fish. In the end, they used a plane, which is a private specialist who helps with great white and whale sightings for tourist groups. And so he was able to spot this because the fish is, think of that as a big flat fish that's roughly 4 feet, sometimes as large as 5 feet in diameter. It's like a big dime, or as Pam said, a big milk dud floating in the ocean with little tiny fins. It moves relatively slowly, stays at the surface. It has a lot of scars, like, you know, you would see in manatees by boats accidentally running into them under the surface, and they dive when they're under threat. But you have to get up close to them. And then they used in our case, a tuna fisherman from Cape Cod, actually from Nantucket, for the first couple of days to reel it in because they'd get close, and then cast line over and mildly hook it and then bring it to the boat and then tie it up against the boat and then do their tagging. And the whole goal of the expedition was to put these repeating satellite signal tags to get the best. And then they had some smaller tags, which just only worked for beacons and other things. And they, as Pam said, they exceeded their minimum their target. So they were very happy because they're very difficult to find. It's only through luck to find them.
They're totally under-researched. Like it was bizarre that, I guess they said there's just so little research done on them that that's why they wanted to do this very sort of bizarre looking fish.
Did you know anything about this fish beforehand? Or
anybody knows that much about them.
We see them in the ocean. You see them in Maine. We'll run into them. You're just running along the coast. They're usually out in the ocean. They're very solitary. You don't ever see them in pods of fish or groups. Mm-hmm. They're solitary animals. But interestingly, like a shark, they can dive to 5,000-10,000 feet deep. And they're so thick, as Pam said, they're covered with parasites. They have their own ecosystem of parasites and other entities living on them. And so the scientists were studying those and some other facts. And Pam is the details she can go through. But you see them, and they're just a big blob on the surface. In fact, there's this famous video and YouTube recording of two Boston guys catching one in the Boston Harbor and thinking it was a whale.
Oh, really?
Well, so
it went viral like years ago. Yeah. It's hysterical. Other than that, we had no experience with them.
Not seen often and not studied often. And that was the problem. That's what the scientists were trying to do, is increase understanding.
Okay. Well, that's great. So was the Mola Mola the topic of discussion over dinner?
Ocean conservation in general, we discussed so many different, because it's just a general, you know, Jamie's interest, lifelong interest in my, you know, we've been on the boat for about 10 years now. So, and prior to that, but in general, there is just one thing you asked before about having this group of people that you don't know, inviting them as guests. It was a little intimidating because they're all like brilliant. They're all like doctors and, you know, professors and everything, but they were just lovely people. It was a nice, really wonderful group of young people who were very intelligent, but very, you know, gregarious and interesting and kind. They got along with the crew wonderfully and never, we didn't feel, they were never condescending, obviously it wouldn't be, but they were really cool. It was really inspiring and it was fun. You know what I mean? To be with that sort of engaging type of group of people where
they're interested in the same things I think most yacht owners are, that the ocean remains a safe and vibrant environment and supports the enormous amount of activity in the world, whether it's transportation and commerce or beaches and sea life, promoting a better understanding as well as doing some very interesting things. I mean, one of the first things we found out about beneath the waves was they recently discovered one of the largest seagrass beds in the world, in the Bahamas. And that discovery has led the Bahamas as a country to not only preserve those seabeds, but to turn it into blue carbon offset capabilities. Because seagrass takes in more carbon dioxide than
a multiple of like 5 or 10.
Than like, you know, anything but the Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to now, the Bahamas, with this discovery and the management of it, sell those carbon offsets, those blue carbon offsets, to organizations around the globe that are emitting too much carbon, want to remain neutral, and therefore it becomes a substantial revenue, tens of millions of dollars potentially, revenue stream to the Bahamas, and so that they can protect their one largest asset, which is beautiful beaches in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And they just went to the a climate conference over in Europe, in Egypt, and presented with the Prime Minister of the Bahamas.
Oh, wow. I miss that. How interesting.
Really interesting, because here they are, a group of scientists. They're very committed to the oceans, but they're discovering ways for whole countries to generate substantial income from the ocean and turn that back into protection for the ocean.
That's the only way to do it, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah.
You can't just tell people stop fishing, stop doing that. You have to give them the means to support their environment. Yeah.
So really interesting group of people, and a fun NGO to be associated with. So we found it fascinating. We probably had more questions for them than they did for us, but they they were very good conversationalists and were quite good guests.
They were wonderful. And we served like dinner very practically, just the pragmatics of it all. We just put like a protective cover in the main salon over the dining room in the main salon and pulled up big. It was kind of like summer camp. Like we would feed them with big, huge, those tin foil trays full of eggs and bacon, whatever, for whatever meal that they were doing, which was, I think they enjoyed it. And yet then they were relaxing in, the salon and everything too, which is very luxurious. But it was very much a jeans and sweatshirt hoodie kind of feel to it.
And they were, to be honest, they were hardworking. They were up early.
Yeah.
We were on the boat. They were up. We had to get up early to get on the program with them. And then they were out late. And as I said, it can be deemed as very boring because you'll spend 7 hours to find two of these fish. Now, each time they found a fish, it was like bringing in a large tuna. It takes about a half an hour to an hour to get it upside the boat, tie it up, measure specimens, take core samples, pick off a couple of the parasites, tag it properly and not hurt the fish, and then slowly let it go and let it swim off. And so, but it's a lot of work, and they're out there for hours at end, and they love the work. They came left with an eagerness and a passion for the ocean in the morning, and they came back with a smile on their face every night. Yeah. So it was fun to see people that committed to that environment.
And our crew, our first mate at the time, was driving the tender the whole time, as well as other crew members joined along, and they loved it.
It was a fun event for the crew too, because they not only had time, but they're also in the same age group. Yeah. This age group of scientists was all 20s to 40s, and our crew was all 20 to 40.
Oh, so yeah.
they had a good time together as well. And we thought it was a good experience for them. They'd like to do it again.
So are you following up with the Mula Mula now that they're tagged? So I guess I can follow them for a little while. Until they lose the tag, as you mentioned.
I think it's almost 3 years, 3 to 5 years those tags last with a long-range battery, because only when the fish surfaces completely will the tag send out the message of where it's been. It'll record the last.
Yes, of course.
But I think they used our, they're calling it basically their pilot project, and the lead scientist on it is Oliver Shipley. And he went, I believe, just a short time later, maybe 2 weeks or a month later, and gathered even more data on the Mula Mula. And now he's partnering with the Massachusetts Department of Marine Fisheries and various organizations, conservation organizations on Cape Cod. And they're sort of just basically now they're creating this database, this unified database of research in one place to put all the research of the Mula Mula. So they haven't discovered exactly yet the importance of it, but it's like a horseshoe crab that's used so massively in medical research. You don't know what you don't know. You have to actually start the research first.
Yeah. I find it very interesting that actually this really big fish is just one of the ones that is totally ignored. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And I'm sure probably there's a lot of information on this growth on their skin that they can analyze.
Well, the growth on their skin is interesting because it sounds gross. I mean, there are like thousands, thousands of parasites and it's its own ecosystem. But the parasites, they're wondering, is it how does the Mula Mula survive within bacterial infections? And that could have huge implications, for humans, basically, or other environmental implications. So it's just you have to start studying it first, right?
Yeah, very good. Well, when we were chatting before the other day, you mentioned perhaps you're considering another expedition. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, we like most, and one of the things, and it's probably true as you run into yacht owners across the world, many of them are very philanthropic and they have other interests outside of the ocean, even though that is a great place to go to relax and enjoy the ocean and the sea and the water if you enjoy it. But So the combination is, I think, attractive. Sea Keepers allows you to do that. And many of these pairing programs like Boat International allow you to do it. So I think it's a great way to help scientists out. Because as Pam said, it's a very, very small amount of philanthropy goes to Ocean Conservatory comparatively given the size of the ocean.
Is that right?
There's more needed.
All philanthropic giving in general.
Yeah, out of all philanthropic giving, it's a very small portion. And so we have looked at our schedules, and like most yachts, we have a summer and a winter schedule. In between, we have yard periods where we're trying to fix things that we break when we're on the ocean, because it can be a difficult and unforgiving environment sometimes to the vessel. And so this winter, we're heading down to the Bahamas, and we were thinking about doing something in Turks and Caicos, because as an example, they're focusing on Turks and Caicos as one of the most vibrant reef environments in the end of the Bahamas, start of the Caribbean chain. It is also one of the birthing locations for the humpback whale and all the whales that migrate all the way up the East Coast to Cape Cod during the summer. They go back down and they birth their babies and maintain and grow them in that Turks and Caicos region. And there's a lot of shark ecosystem. So like a lot of people, you know, whales and sharks are attractive. They're interesting, large creatures, some for boating, some welcoming that you want to hear about. But they're doing a number of projects down there. And so we're looking at, can we combine a week there where we can host one of their teams again on the vessel? We would add it's very low cost. We're going to be running the vessel anyway. We're paying for the crew anyway. And so that's a big deal for them to get a place to stay and not have to pay for hotel rooms and go on and off. They can be anchored for many of these larger vessels in a location, never leave except for in the tender. So they get more hours for their scientific endeavors. And yet for us, it's a little bit of extra food and some fuel to run a tender constantly for a couple of days for them. So it's a low cost, high impact type of philanthropic event. And we're looking at doing another one this winter. Or at worst case, this next summer again, where the yacht will be. So it's pretty easy to do, and it's something we'd do again.
Oh, great. That's wonderful to hear. And the legalities are pretty simple. I mean, you know, we're always in this world of who is responsible for what. If you let a group of scientists on your tender, for example, is it all easy to figure out?
We did it this summer. So it was August? Yeah, it was August 2022. So everybody, we were like, okay, are they vaccinated? What's the COVID status? You know, that whole thing. And then they
provide releases, formal legal releases that are going to absolve you of any liability for accident or injury that they cause. And you certainly have to have your own crew manning the tender or on the vessel when they're on the vessel. But, you know, most yachts that can host four or five scientists at a time and their equipment, which takes up some space. They bring a number of these big plastic cartons you'd see like for a film crew onto the vessel because they're self-contained in their laboratories on the vessel then, and they'll set them out up outside. But with that and even a filming, we had a video specialist that works for Beneath the Waves, and they came and filmed it all. I think you've seen one of the videos, and it's pretty cool. So
yeah, it is.
They took total responsibility for that, but you'd always want your crew on board while they were on board.
Yeah. And the crew obviously did, as we said, pretty well with them. So that's good. Exactly. It's important, right?
Happy crew, happy boat.
That's what I keep hearing.
But our group too, it was two professors. It was at Florida Western University.
Florida Western University.
And the two young women from there, they took a lot of photographs while they were on the expedition. And I was just told yesterday, like, it's incredible for the professor because sometimes oceanography classes, you're just looking at slide after slide of these pictures, but her students now get to appreciate she's in the photos. They see her doing research. And that sometimes with ocean research, I think because it's removed, you can't get to, it's not easily accessible. So they really appreciate it. But my point is they're really serious people. We had the same reservations, of course, you're like, oh, this group of people you don't know on your boat. But they were all hardworking professionals who were really fun to talk to and engaging. So it all worked out.
That's great. So, well, that's really interesting. And I imagine you recommend other people to consider this if they can.
Absolutely. They, as I said, they're almost always going to have time that's available. I think, as you've already pointed out, Cecile, they're, there's going to be a concern about liability. They provide the releases for all of that. And we were comfortable after checking with our lawyers that that was going to provide protection. So we didn't end up with a lawsuit or some encumbrance. To the extent that we could, we did that checking. We're very comfortable with it. And as Pam said, these were professionals. They were never, they weren't, you know, doing things they shouldn't have been on the vessel. They were literally using our boat as primarily a place to sleep and be close to the ocean so they could do more scientific discovery. So for five, almost six straight days, they were off the boat, literally from 8 a.m. till 5 or 6 when it was dinner time.
But in our tender, they did use
in the tender, and they rented, they had other people donate tenders at times that were even bigger that they take it further, farther afield. And so, but as an owner, we saw very, very low risk. There's always some risk in anything you did, but a high impact for them to be able to study and make advancements that keep the environment we're running the vessel in, you know, as best it can be kept. And that's important to us. So thought it was a great way for an owner to give back. As I mentioned, a lot of these owners are philanthropic and have their own charities anyway. And so this is just another way that we found relatively painless, in fact, very exciting and fun to be around and participate. You can't often participate in you're sometimes in philanthropic endeavors, you're just giving money. In this case, we could actually participate and they welcome your participation. Yeah. If you were up for getting out there at 5 and driving around the water for 7 hours until lunch and then going back out, they were game to take you in every event and it was always safe. So it's a fun way to give back.
Yeah. Did it give you a new perception of your boat too? I mean, it's like you use it for something else, maybe more appreciation for the environment or the ocean, which you already love, otherwise you wouldn't have a boat. But.
Right. And we love the fact that this uses the explore nature of our boat. As you know, that's one of the bigger segments and growth segments as we look at it. Our boat is a relatively simple boat, but it is large enough to go offshore and remain there in a location and support them. And so it was great to be able to do that and use the boat for what it was built for and have it full. And, and the boat and our crew performed as well as the scientists. There was no flaw. And we didn't run into, as we said, the scientists accomplished 110% of the goal. So in all aspects, it was a good event. But yes, gave us further appreciation of the explorer nature of our boat.
That's great. Well, good. You mentioned that video and I did get to see it. Is it something that people can find online or is it something that is not being shared?
Absolutely. Beneath the Waves. It's an NGO in Washington, D.C. Ollie, or the head scientist, the lead scientist from Beneath the Waves, joined us and led the Mola Mola research along with the other scientists. And yeah, you can find it right online at, my assumption is, beneaththewaves.com, but it might be .org.
Well, that's really great. Well, thank you very much. I realize that here we are, and I'm probably holding you off from preparing your Thanksgiving feast.
Thank you. It's a lot of work. This is much more fun.
Yeah, is it? Okay, good. Well, maybe, you know, there's always takeout. Do they do takeout in Vermont? I don't know.
No, actually, we are pretty remote. They do not.
All right. Well, thank you again very, very much for your time and for telling us about this experience of yours. And happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you. Thank you for the interest and the promoting it. It's great.
Thank you for listening to the Big Boat Interview on Boat Briefing, a production of Boat International Media. This episode was edited and produced by Grace Nielsen. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe and tell a friend.